I Dream of Indie is funded by great fans like yourself. Head on over to idreamofindie.com or youtube.com/idreamofindie to learn all the different ways you can help us bring a voice to the voiceless ones in gaming and defeat the gaming echo chamber once and for all.
Are there too many roguelikes? Is it time to move on from the Xbox One console reveal? And does the price of AAA games rising create an opportunity for indie games? Let's find out next on Force Feedback.
Force Feedback.
Greetings, everybody. Welcome to I Dream of Indie. I'm Old Gamer Joe here with Silent Signs and the ex-hardcore gamer to discuss three hot-button topics in gaming today. How's everybody doing?
I'm living the dream.
Oh, yeah. Good to go.
Good to go. Ex-hardcore gamer, I know our audience isn't too familiar with you yet, so just a real quick introduction to what you're all about. What's kind of your history with games and specifically indie games?
So basically, I've been playing video games for pretty much my whole life. I remember as far back as being 4 years old playing games and just following along all that time, getting all the consoles as they come out, or at least the majority of them, also playing PC. I'm an old man now, so it's a lot of years of experience playing games, and I love indie games because they try new things, they bring it back to some of the old classic styles, so it's always fun to play games.
Very cool. Well, this should be a fun debate between the three of us. This is entirely new. We're a little bit out of our element, I would say.
I am always out of my element. I don't think there's an element for me, to be honest.
But our first topic of discussion today is, are there too many roguelikes? And we actually ran this poll in the community section. A lot of you did take part. We'll get into some of those comments, but I'm going to start with the ex-hardcore gamer. Real simple here. Describe to people first, for those that might not know, what is a roguelike, and perhaps what's the difference between a roguelike and a roguelite?
All right, so there's definitely a difference in that they sometimes get interchanged, that they kind of both get, you know, used when it could be one versus the other. So a roguelike is a game that basically is like the game Rogue, which is an old PC game where it has a lot of different elements that it has to meet that criteria of turn-based, randomly generated levels, permadeath, etc., etc. And if it meets all of that criteria, then you're dealing with a roguelike. If it only has some of those, then it is a roguelite. That is the difference, at least that's how I understand it.
And what is a Rogue Zero Sugar?
That would be the one that is filled with artificial sweetener.
Gotcha.
And is not good. I don't know.
So there's a lot of these games out there right now, very popular, and what a surprise when something becomes popular, more and more people try to cash in on that. So you're seeing a lot of these style of games. But do you think, I'll start with you, Silent Signs, is this a bad thing necessarily, or is this a good thing?
Not at all. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I mean, are all of them great? Absolutely not. But there are so many indie games out there. I don't think it's just roguelikes and roguelites that there's a bountiful amount of. There's so many puzzle games, so many, I guess there aren't as many RPGs, but there's a lot of indie games out there. They're easier to make, and this one in particular is kind of in fashion right now, I feel like. So you're seeing a lot of them in the spotlight, but I don't think it's possible for there to be too much of a game.
Yeah, you know, when I look back on things all the way back to my early days of gaming with the regular Nintendo, I wasn't really complaining when there were a lot of platformer games. That was really a lot of the library, right?
Yeah,
when
you look at it. Kind of what was.
And nobody was upset about that. So yeah. Why are some people upset about this right now, ex-hardcore gamer?
So the way I look at it is that, you know, I'm in agreement that there's definitely not too many, because it's just like anything. You talk about platformers in the 8-bit,
right.
16-bit, to, you know, 2D one-on-one fighters. Like, there's always going to be something that is a genre or a type of game that becomes prevalent. And there's a fluctuation. There'll be an increase and a decrease. So people get upset because they think that, oh, here's another one. But, like, I think the rage just comes from because they want a very particular type of thing, mm-hmm. and they have to weed through all these other things that are coming through. Like, you know, when you look on Steam and you look at the new releases every week, there's just so many games, it's hard to get through it all. We were discussing before in the Discord, somebody made a comment about how it was the Golden Week sale and they couldn't get through even just looking through the listing of all the games. There's just so much out there. But that's also when you start dealing with filters. If people, the way I look at it, if you don't like games that have these elements, you can just check that little filter and just be like, don't show me these games. Like,
sure, that's a good call.
But Granted, that's only on Steam. It's not as easy if you're a Switch player or other consoles. So I think it's just that people, there's such a large amount of content available now that it's hard to get to it all. And so when you're wasting so much time even just searching through it, it's hard to get to the stuff that you actually do want to get to.
Well, here's the thing. I think it can be a little frustrating too when a game looks really interesting to you and really exciting, and then you realize as you're playing it, it's extremely difficult and you can't really get anywhere in the game for hours and hours. It just goes on. I experience this frustration. These are some of the hardest games to review because, to be honest with you, I like grinding, especially in the traditional sense back with JRPGs. I actually found it kind of relaxing in a way, but with these games, it is very slow, it's very methodical, and you don't get to see a lot of the game until you're able to progress further and further into it, which can take a long, long time.
But on the flip side, you get more value out of that game because you're going to play it a whole lot more than you would if you were just
doing a single playthrough. Yes. But is it valuable when you're not having fun after a while? Well, I think a lot of people don't have fun going through the same area for 4 to 5 hours.
But it's not the same area if it's randomly generated.
Right. This is true in those cases.
So like that's kind of when you're dealing with the true, like, ideal setup of those types of games.
But you know what I mean, right? The setting is kind of similar so after a while. It all kind of gets a little bit
a few points samey. To make here. First of all, if you're not having fun playing a game, you probably shouldn't be playing it. Maybe it's just not for you.
Right.
And it sucks if you spent money on it, but yes, it is what it is. It's going to happen to the best of us. You happen to be in kind of a unique position because, unfortunately, whether we like a game or not, sometimes we do have to finish the game. So that might not be an issue that everybody has. But, you know, for some of these games, I think the issue is you do like the concept of it. You like
right.
the
this
story.
Has happened to me many
you
times.
Like the characters. You just don't want to keep trying to do something that you feel like you can't do.
I don't take joy in dying in the game over and over again. I don't know about you, ex-hardcore gamer, but a lot of people like the challenge, don't they?
Well, that's what I was going to say was, for me, when I play these types of games, it's like when you finally get over that hump of beating that part that you couldn't get through or getting that little bit further, like it feels so rewarding that you were able to do it. When we were kids and you played a game that you died over and over again on the level, you'd have to start all over again because there were no auto save and checkpoints and this and that. It was like you used up your 3 lives. Now you're starting all over again from the beginning, and you had to get better to get through, to get to that point that you died at to begin with, and then see if you can get past that point that you died at. And so it's a constant evolution of improving your skill to get forward with it. So like for me, like I loved Dead Cells, and yeah, I'm playing a lot of the same areas over and over again, but it's randomly generated, and I'm having fun playing it, so the more I play it, the better I get. But that's also one of those games that, as you die, you still carry some stuff over from your previous run, so you're still making some progress, at least in some way.
Yeah, and I'd say the same thing for me with Binding of Isaac is, you start from square one every time, but you can unlock new characters with new abilities and things like that, and you always have that randomly generated items and randomly generated rooms and enemies, so...
Let's get into some of the comments here. First, we have CryptKicker5, who says, there are too many lazy, half-hearted, randomized games posing as roguelikes. Never actually enough good ones. What do you say to that, Silent Signs?
I mean, not every game's going to be for everybody, and I guess, yeah, there it can be lazy to overuse something that's out there a lot right now, and, you know, they see that it's making money, and they're having some success and they want to capitalize on that. That stinks, but I can't really fault them for making a game that's going to sell, you know, at the end of the day.
And it goes for any genre. You know, how many Match 3 games came out? How many first-person shooters came out? How many, you know, stealth games?
This isn't new is what you're saying.
No, this is the gaming industry. This is the music industry where bands start coming out that all sound like it's the movie industry where it's a similar plot. It's just... when, like you said, when something makes money, they want to do it too.
Sure, right. It doesn't have to be a good action movie, as we found out tonight when we were watching Hard Target 2, but it can still be entertaining. Mac O'Megley writes in and says, agreed that there are some lazy ones out there, but every now and then an amazing one pops up. There's not enough high-quality ones like ZHP, The Unlosing Ranger versus Dark Death Evilmon, or Dungeons of Dreadmoor. I give you credit, Mac. I've heard of neither of those.
I love Dungeons of Dreadmoor, actually. That was actually, if it was going to come up where you needed me to give examples of ones that were well done, Dungeons of Dreadmoor was going to be the one that I used. I played a lot of that one, and I spent a lot of time playing it. That one, if anybody hasn't played it, I highly recommend it. It's on sale, you know, frequently. It's older now, but it still holds up, I think.
Fredo Grosso writes in and says, yeah, but there's still something for everyone out there. I mean, mm-hmm. The Longing had the top views on our channel this week, right?
That's
Which
true.
Is a good point. There's still a wide variety of games. I would say if you feel like there's too many of these, you can always just ignore them, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
You don't have to play them necessarily. White Knight writes in and says, I've never been a big fan of roguelikes. The thought of starting over after dying over and over and over doesn't really do it for me. I prefer to feel like I'm progressing through a story, not like I'm in purgatory. Having said that, I like Dead Cells, though I've never been motivated to actually try to finish it.
Yeah, I can see where they're coming from with that. But I also think that there's also multiple genres that some of the elements are bleeding over into. Perfect example that comes to mind was Road Redemption. So here's a game where you're going to die over and over again. It's just like when you played Road Rash back in the day, which is that was like a spiritual sequel. Mm. But every time you play, you're getting a little bit extra boost in your speed or weapon strength or something like that. And then you get to like kind of checkpoints. So you're not necessarily starting all the way from the beginning. You might be able to start in like stage 5 as opposed to stage 1 or something like that. So it all depends on what genre you're playing and what you're looking for. All these points are great. They're all valid. And so I think that sometimes it's just people might need to kind of fine tune and hone in on which ones are the style that they're looking for. But also, yeah, if you don't like dying over and over again, we don't all have unlimited time to play these games. So it can be frustrating to go over and over again. That's why I personally was never huge into JRPGs. I would be grinding all this time out and then I'd die and my save was from an hour and a half prior and I was like, I'm done.
You see, with the traditional JRPGs, though, you feel like it's so easy to grind, whereas in some of these modern roguelikes, it's extremely challenging and it's punishing. I feel like those early randomized JRPG battles were just a matter of sitting there and mashing on the buttons and getting through the battle, and you get a little bit stronger, but that's not the case in a lot of modern roguelikes. You really have to earn it, especially, thinking of a game like West of Dead, where it's a, I don't know if you played that game.
Oh yeah, I love that game.
That's a huge grind to make any progress, and you really don't feel like you're getting much stronger for a long, long time.
But I'll play like a brawler, let's say, over and over again, playing mm-hmm. the same like 6 levels that game has in the 16-bit.
And you
know?
Never get any better in those.
And you never get any better, and I still have fun doing it. So now if I'm playing a game that's kind of similar in that vein, but I'm getting levels that are slightly different because it's like a randomly set up whatever, I'm okay with it because I'm still playing. Castle Crashers, I can just play over and over and over again. I'm getting better, yes. But the idea of you're just playing kind of the same levels over and over again. So even though the randomization doesn't make it drastically different, it is kind of nice to, it doesn't feel completely the same every time. Like, oh, this is going to be the part when this guy runs out. This is going to be the part when this enemy comes. And this is the pattern I have to learn. Like, you kind of have to like react on the fly versus like memorizing a pattern.
Flower Angel Rave writes in and says, I'm torn, if only because I do enjoy roguelikes and there are some really good ones out there, but there are also mediocre ones and ones that are clearly just trying to cash in on their popularity. We touched on this a little bit already. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to say yes just because of that. Silent Sons?
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of circles back to what I was saying earlier. There's always going to be people who want to cash in on a craze, and things come in and out of fashion so fast. And I mean, that's not just games. That's literal fashion and music and movies. You know, bell bottom jeans were fashionable when I was younger.
Is this fashionable?
That was never in fashion. Thank you for asking.
I'm not the person to ask about fashion.
But point being, yeah, it's fashionable right now to make a roguelike or a roguelite, and it's selling, so they're gonna do it until it's no longer in fashion, but it'll probably come back someday. It's the circle of trends.
And I think it's important for people to just kind of understand that you don't have to like something for it to exist, and that's okay. Like, that we can kind of move on, and just for the people who do enjoy it, why take the joy away from them?
Last but not least, we have Nathan Moore, who says, I don't see many on Xbox, but maybe I'm not aware of them. This might be a good one for you, ex-hardcore gamer. I wish Xbox had a separate category for indies. Is this true? There's no category.
You are our resident Xbox owner.
So on Xbox, it's going to be, it's going to come down to, there's a lot of search filters and all different kinds of categories and stuff you can look through on Xbox. Mm. But you're going to see it. It's just going to be that you're searching for indie. It's not you're searching for a roguelite specifically. You're going to find the games on Xbox. I find that most games that you find that are indies on other consoles will also be on Xbox. You have the ID at Xbox program where they actually start off as an exclusive to the Xbox, or at least Xbox and PC, because they're kind of a weird little hybrid thing going on now. So the bottom line is that they are there. If you're not seeing them, it probably is that, just like you say, you're not as aware. There's a lot of stuff to filter through and get through there. PC is going to always be where it's at, where it's so much easier to develop and publish on a PC that you're going to find a lot more games on there. And then you get some of that trickle down onto the consoles when they're the more popular ones. So I haven't really seen, but again, I haven't also paid attention to roguelites specifically, that I usually just see in general. If I see a game on one platform as an indie, you're going to see it on all platforms.
All right, so in conclusion, to answer the question, are there too many roguelikes? If you think yes, raise your hands. And if you think no, just give me one of these.
I'm not going to do that, but I think no.
I'm with you. I think no, there's never too many games. There's so many games for people to enjoy that it's really not a problem if there are a lot of roguelikes.
There's too many for me to personally play, but that doesn't mean that there's too many out there in the world.
There's too many games for me to personally play, so.
That's this kind of what it comes down to. That's the part of the whole X-Hardcore with my name is just, I just don't have the time to just barrel down and just try to crush through these games anymore, you know? I gotta kind of pick and choose, but there's nothing wrong with it. So, like what you like, people. Don't like what you don't like. It's all good with us. All
right, so Sony Interactive Entertainment recently released its financial results for the year, revealing it had sold 7.8 million PS5 consoles. I'm not sure how this is possible because I can't find this console anywhere, and everyone I talk to can't seem to find it either, but somehow they've managed to set records still. This is unbelievable to me.
You can't find it because 7.8 million people already bought it.
Yep. Yeah, it's still selling. People
just
want
not
it.
To you.
And then there's also, I mean, let's be honest, there are scalpers that are involved too. It's not like it's sold through to people who are playing it in their living room right now. Mm-hmm. You have people that are just thinking that it's going to be a nice way to get rich quick.
Point being, though, Sony earned 40% more in revenue than Xbox as of right now. Do you think, ex-hardcore gamer, people are still stuck on the Xbox One reveal all the way back when, and they haven't forgiven Xbox yet for this? Is that the reason that Sony is still kind of dominating right now, or is there another reason?
No, I just think it's just in general. You always have it where people kind of pick their spot in the sand. You know, they draw that line, and they're back on the playground of, like, is it going to be Sega, or is it going to be Nintendo? And now it's Microsoft and Sony. You know, I think that people just really... Sony has done a really good job at building their brand and building that loyalty with their fans. And so when a new system comes out, they just automatically want to buy that. Myself included, I really enjoyed my Xbox One. So when the Xbox Series X came out, I grabbed it. But I also liked it because I was able to still play my games that I've already purchased. And now that backwards compatibility is a thing again, when you build an older library, you want to be able to carry that over. So if you're already built up all this library on a PlayStation, do you really want to buy an Xbox and be starting all over again?
No.
Yeah, it's a fair point. But here's the thing. The script has flipped before in the past. Certainly, we saw with the PS3, the 360 more or less dominated for a long, long time. I think the PS3 did eventually kind of catch up, but we've seen it flip before where loyalty can kind of switch. Do you see that happening in the future? Or it's certainly not happening as of right now.
They don't
want
to give up their trophies, man. They're building up their profiles. They can't start all over again at gamer score zero, like, or vice versa. You know, it's like you're invested now in that ecosystem that you want to keep going. I definitely think it is possible. It could happen. But at the same time, I think Microsoft has really shifted their focus that they don't really care about that anymore. They're putting everything that they own that they put out, they're going to put it all on PC as well. Game Pass is on PC. Like, yeah. They really are kind of looking at it in a different way, and that's okay, because Nintendo looks at things in a different way, and they're doing okay. You know, like, if everybody kind of does things in a different way that, like, helps out and goes to a particular audience, and that audience is happy, I think there's room for all three systems, and that's quite all right for them to do it that way.
So, Science, what do you think? Do you think, with such goodwill now, Xbox with Game Pass and everything that's going on, can they come back? Can they become the dominant brand in gaming ever again? Or are they just happy with what they're doing? Obviously, they're still making money. But do you think this still stems from all of the negativity that was around the Xbox One? Or do you just think Sony is just dominating because of their brand?
I don't even remember. What was the negativity about the Xbox One?
When it came out, people were upset because it was more expensive. It was $500. It forced the Kinect. People were kind of scared that it was spying on them.
Was spying, right?
So and, here's the thing.
And then the PlayStation came out. It was $100 cheaper. Didn't force the camera.
Yeah, okay, now I remember that. But I think a lot of people are like me and don't think back that far. Like, I don't think a lot of people are thinking about that today. And I also think that it comes down a lot to what you're comfortable with, like, interface-wise, too. If you get used to a certain kind of interface, like, even if Mac versus PC, if you're used to a Mac interface, you're not going to switch to PC interface just because the new one came out. Like, right. That doesn't make any sense.
That's a good point. And the ecosystem, too. You're so into that world, and people are into the trophies, like ex-hardcore gamers. And also,
iPhone versus Android.
Exactly. Right. It also depends on what kind of games you're looking to play, too, because us being an indie channel, a lot of our folks are playing on Switch because so many indies come out on Switch, or on PC because so many indies come out on PC. So, I don't know.
But there's a market for everything. You hear this whole argument all the time, too, that, oh, there's nothing to play on Xbox, which I think is complete baloney myself. There's plenty of games to play on Xbox. Where do you think this comes from, though?
So, people look at exclusives and act like that's the only thing that exists on a system. So, you know, yeah, there was not a lot of exclusives on the Xbox later in its life cycle on the Xbox One, so they're like, there are no games. But if you only own an Xbox One, you were still getting all the Call of Duties, you're still getting all the EA Sports games, you're still getting all these top titles that people love to play.
Yeah.
They just didn't have, you know, God of War and Uncharted and stuff like that, which obviously is a big deal to not have those games. But to say that there are no games, the same thing happens with Nintendo. Oh, there's no new Nintendo games coming out on the Switch. Yeah, but you still have, you know, Kingdoms of Amalur and all these other games that are coming out on all platforms. If that's your only console that you have, you're still going to be happy because you're still going to have plenty to play, but people are so focused on what the exclusives are that they kind of become blinded because maybe they own multiple systems, so they're playing the Call of Duty on their PS5, so they're like, well, the Xbox One doesn't have anything. And I can kind of get it.
You know, one of my pet peeves, ex-hardcore gamer and Silent Signs, is when people tell me there's nothing to play right now, we're in a drought, and this is always crazy to me because we're constantly flooded with games here at I Dream of Indie. So many games come out now week after week. Where do you think this comes from, this whole idea that there's nothing to play or it's a slow time? Is this just the people that are strictly playing the next big AAA game and they pay attention to nothing else?
Absolutely. People who don't care about indies or don't like certain genres of game. Like, if you're just looking for first-person shooters and the latest, greatest Halo game hasn't come out, then yeah, you're gonna say there's nothing to play, you know? Like,
you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think that I see that all the time with people that, you know, they want to play that latest and greatest, and the thing that I don't get is if something is like not from that year, then they're like, oh, I missed it, I'm not gonna even try to play
it now. They have to be up to date.
It has to be up to date. And so, like, I don't get that either, because okay, so maybe nothing has come out in the last couple months that has interested you. But, you know, there's only, you know, 40 years of gaming that you can catch up on in the meantime. Like, you know, like, it's just so weird to me. Like, even if you want to stick to the same generation, like, there's games all the time that it'll be on sale and I'll be like, oh, that's right, I wanted to play this. And I'll pick it up and I'll grab it and I play it. You know, it was only last summer when we were all stuck in our homes in quarantine
I was playing
Assassin's Creed Origins. That game came out a few years ago, but I hadn't played it yet. So I finally sat down and took the time to play it. But if I was the latest and greatest guy, I would have been like, oh, this is old and crappy.
To be fair, though, if first-person shooters and online gameplay is your thing, it might be hard
that is true.
To jump in.
If you're outnumbered, you're outgunned, and or the servers are already like
not populated anymore, or you're just straight up outclassed. I get that.
That's
I
know true. Too,
like a lot in the Discord, we hear, "Oh, our backlog, you know, our backlog is filling up." Oof. So people have things to play, but it seems like as time goes on, that backlog just eventually becomes forgotten, and you never go back to that backlog, which is an issue all of its own, and that's a whole nother discussion for another episode.
Yeah, I don't want to even get into that when we start looking at my Steam library, my Xbox library, and oh yeah.
At any rate, let's head into our final topic for the day. Last but not least, we're going to be talking about the rising prices of games in the AAA industry. Obviously, it's been announced that games are going up to $70.
Whoa.
What?
Look at the price of games.
Oh, gee, I thought there was a spider above me or something.
Carry on.
But at any rate, the price is going up on not every game, right? Just some games, $70.
Yeah, I haven't seen it on every. You'll see, you know, you're going to see something like the Call of Duty that if you want the next gen, Demon's Souls was a famous example, but there's still examples of games staying at 60 or even less.
My question, though, is, I'll start with you, Silent Signs, is this an opportunity for indies to step up at a lower price point and really shine and succeed as less people, according to our poll data anyways, will be buying these AAA games?
We did have a small sample, but
it's about 200.
Relative to the entire gaming community, a very small sample. But to be fair, I think they're already doing that, even before the price hike.
No, I think that's fair. I think when you can release a game for $9, $10, $14, $15, whatever, and yet you can get three or four of those versus one AAA game, which will cost you $60, there's value in that.
We've talked about this. How do you quantify the value of a game? Is it in the amount of hours you get to play that game? Is it in the kind of emotional value the game has for you? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Ex-hardcore gamer, what do you think?
I think this is something that's always been the case, that indies have always had that little pocket of the audience where it's like, we want to give you something more bang for your buck or a cheaper value or whatever. And that's nothing new. That's what they've been doing. And at the same time, like, prices, they're going up, yes. But at the same time, they've been at the same point for a while. Mm-hmm. And you've seen an increase in games that do like a deluxe edition or a gold edition. So really, it's not going up. And if you go back and like look at like adjusting for inflation, even if you go back to, let's say, when the 360 launched and we started games at $60, if you adjust for inflation, that's like an $80 game now.
Sure, yeah.
So no. $70 is still cheaper than if you bought Gears of War back in the 360. So it's always been this big battle. And I think one thing that's really cool too is that gaming is actually really unique in this aspect. When you would go and buy an album, which I know we don't do that anymore, and I'm old.
I do. But I buy vinyls.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Right. But a lot fair of times enough. When you buy music, it's kind of relatively the same price no matter what. Now, obviously, when you start getting into collector's edition vinyls and stuff, but back in the day when you go and buy a CD, when you go to the movie theater, it doesn't matter whether you're going to see an indie movie or you're going to see the latest blockbuster, that ticket price is the same. If you're buying a movie on Blu-ray, typically the new release, whatever it is, it's still going to be the same price. So I think you're kind of in a unique situation in gaming that you can actually have an experience for $0.99, $5, $60, $80. Like, there's a wide range and it can fit whatever your budget is or whatever you feel is quote unquote worth it.
Yeah, you know, when you think about it, I can remember being about 12 years old, my grandmother took me to the mall to get Final Fantasy 3 or 6, as most of you know it, and that was an $80 cart on the Super Nintendo. Yeah. So,
yeah,
really, it's kind of incredible that the price hike has taken so long to happen. Why do you think it's been able to sustain at 60 for so long?
So they originally were able to drop prices on games because they switched from cartridges to CDs. So CDs were way cheaper to produce and you could store way more on it. So you started getting these games that were more expensive because they were big cartridges holding a lot. So your Street Fighter 2 Turbo, that was $80. You had your Final Fantasy, like you said, on Genesis, Fantasy Star 4 was $100. Virtua Racing was $100 because they put a chip in it to allow it to do the 3D graphics similar to the Super FX chip on Super Nintendo.
Sure.
And so you had all these games that to put it into the cartridge, it was very expensive. So they put them on CDs, that made it cheaper. And then you started getting things like first party games being cheaper. So you had your $39.99 game instead of $49.99 game on the Saturn, for example. And so as games jumped to HD, they were like, look, games are becoming more expensive. We need to raise the price. So they're slowly doing it, but I think they've been able to hold it steady and kind of stagnating it by having these games now have seasons passes, DLC, microtransactions. There's other ways to make money that you don't necessarily need to grab that right away, that full amount of money. And then that's why you still have games that are totally free that are still making millions and billions of dollars. I mean, look at Fortnite. If you wanted to, you could play that 100% for free and be totally fine, but yet they're making more money than anybody else.
You know, I think you could argue too, when you have massive games like Fallout, for example, would you pay $100 for something like that? You're getting so many hours, you know? If you were paying $100 for virtual racing, like you're saying, then...
Which had like three tracks at the time. Like, you would be done in it in no time.
You know, so maybe there is some value in that. So, you know, I kind of went into this thinking that, yeah, $70 is a lot of money, and it is. But at the same time, you get a lot of value out of some of these games. Something like, you know, you mentioned Assassin's Creed earlier. That'll last you 70, 80 hours. Maybe it's not such a bad thing, and still, indies will be cheap and affordable for the most part. I think that is a trend that will never really change. They're always going to be cheaper than AAA games, obviously. So, yeah, I do think there's always an opportunity for indies to shine, but it really comes down to the marketing and just how exciting the indie game looks.
You know, one thing that stinks, though, is that back in the day when there were cartridges, you could sell your game back to the store and somebody could buy that game for a lesser price. With there being so many more digital copies of games now, you don't have that option to sell it back and buy it at a cheaper price, or at least not as many options as you used to. So I almost wonder if that kind of ostracizes a certain group of gamers that might not want to buy it full price
That's a good point, but I've also seen where like the value drops in games so quickly now that it's
sales
almost like the putting it back and trading it in or selling it or whatever, you almost like, unless you like sell it within like the first couple of weeks, like you're really not getting a whole lot towards it anyway. And that really helped me switch to a more almost all digital like collection, because I really wasn't getting much more in to by going back and forth and trading and this and that.
Yeah.
And for the time that you spend on doing that, it's like, you know what? Never mind. And that's also why I'm also really into the how more and more subscription type models are coming out, with things like Game Pass, PlayStation Now, where it's like, you know what? Okay, I don't own this game. Sure, I don't own it. But I'm only paying this amount of money per month, and I have this game for a certain amount of time. And when I'm done with it, I don't have to worry about trading it in or selling it. But I also don't own the game anymore. It's gone. Like, it got cycled out or whatever the case may be.
Or if that service one day goes away, you invested this money and you don't have anything to show.
But in the end, I'm still spending less money and playing more games. So I don't see that as a bad thing.
No, I agree. And I think that's an interesting subject, you know. But overall, what do you think? Let us know in the comments below all of the topics we've discussed today. Be sure to take part in the conversations. We'll be running polls for the next episode very soon as well in our community section. Any closing thoughts, Silent Signs?
This has been fun. Gamer?
Yeah, no, definitely. I had a blast. It's nice to, well, again, I'm not seeing any of you, but you're seeing me. So it's nice to see me. No, that's not right.
It's nice
anyway,
to see me.
It's nice to see me. Anyway, I know it's been fun doing this. I hope that people enjoy this and we can kind of have some more fun too. Get them more involved. I liked how we had some comments to go on some of the users
Definitely,
already and the viewers. So it's been fun. It's been good to talk about games again and the fact that we are together. Like, this has been a long time coming, and so that was fun because we couldn't do this for a little bit.
No, that's very special in its own right. So thank you all for watching. We'll see you next time on Force Feedback.